Welcome to Health Matters, the mental health division. That's us. I'm your host, Dr. Mark Vegan, psychologist, along with my co-host, Shelley Visconti, counselor and marriage and family therapist. We welcome all of you. This evening, we're going to do another discussion on creativity, which we did several months ago and which we had a lot of positive feedback about. So we're going to do creativity again and talk about the role it plays in mental health. We invite you, our listeners, to call in with your comments and your questions. Our number here at Red River Radio is 1-800-552-8502. This evening, we have two very, very special guests, Anne Gramillion, co-owner of Gramillion and Pugh Integrated Marketing, and Logan Sledge. And Logan is an assistant professor of theater at Centenary College, and we're hoping that he will continue to be an assistant professor, if not a professor, ultimately at Centenary College. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
And thank you for being here. Anne, would you just take a minute and kind of tell us a little bit about yourself? And I want you to bring your speaking voice right up to that microphone.
All right. I'll be happy to. I am the co-owner of Gramillion and Pugh Integrated Marketing, which is a full-service marketing firm that is celebrating its 35th anniversary this October.
Right.
And we're doing business in almost 40 states across this union. And I'm very proud of the, we call it integrated marketing because we can do anything from public relations to fantastic print advertising to web design to video production, illustration and photography. Whatever it best serves the client, we've got it under our roof. And I am a Centenary College graduate and have enjoyed acting as a avocation for most of my life.
You know, we've got a lot of local folks who run businesses here in the North Louisiana, East Texas, Arkansas, this area down to Alexandria, who produce products that are sent all over the country, some all over the world. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know that you were providing services to 40 different states, but there's some other great companies here that are similar to yours.
Yes, indeed.
It's really quite exciting. Logan, tell us a little bit about you.
Well, as you mentioned earlier, I'm a visiting assistant professor of theater at Centenary College.
And we're wanting you to be the permanent.
Indeed.
I so appreciate your kind words and thoughts as it relates to that. We will soon find out. I'm hoping to continue on as the assistant professor of theater at Centenary. It was a great home for me as a young theater artist. It's where I learned so much and grew so much as an actor and performer. And from Centenary, graduating from there, went out and did graduate work on the West Coast at Cal State Fullerton. And got my MFA in acting at that school. Mm-hmm. And got a little tired of driving around in so much traffic. and my family and I moved back to Shreveport, Louisiana. And so that's why I was able to take on the job at Centenary.
How long have you been here now?
We have been back we moved back in 2008.
Both of you are Centenary graduates, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's good.
A little bit of difference in time.
Oh, that's fine. That's fine. Tonight we're going to be talking about creativity. And I, as a psychologist, when I think about creativity, this is kind of the way I think about it. I think about higher mental processes. That's what our $50 term. And, you know, we as individuals, we take in sensory information. And then what do we do with that? Well, we pay attention to it. We concentrate on it. We then learn something about it. Then we engage our memory. And then we move on to problem solving. It might be concrete problem solving or abstract problem solving. And then there's a level beyond that that I think all of us as human beings have, which is a level of creativity. Hmm. And then out of this black box, which we call the mind, which is more than the brain, comes output, motor output. People do things. People act. People paint. People go to work. People listen to each other. People solve social problems. People practice law and medicine and so forth. And so that's how I think about it as a component of our mind, of our brain's ability, our mind's ability to take in information. What do we do with it and then put out information? Mm-hmm. How do you all respond to my limited thinking about creativity?
I would say limited. That was pretty...
quite extensive, I would say.
I always think, when I think of creativity, accessing, using the imagination, I think that's a big component. In creating something, sometimes specifically... some form of art as it relates to creativity. And that's primarily based on my own background and experience with, you know, using creativity to create theater on stage.
Anne, what do you think?
Well, I've been racking my brain ever since we first started talking about this particular session about, I've been asked so many times, so you went from acting to opening up a marketing firm. How did that happen? And I think I have the answer. One of the things that drew me to advertising was the art of communication, which I was given a very strong background in my acting experience, and the ability to imagine through the art of radio, the theater of the mind. Really, creativity is everywhere. If you allow it to be, I'm fully convinced that most people are terribly creative, but because we've managed as adults to define creativity in these very strong terms that apply to art, visual artists or great pianists, that people don't understand that creativity is probably playing a huge part of their everyday life if they could stand back and look at it.
Well, that happened in Shelley, you know, the other day when we were discussing creativity.
Yes.
I was saying that, you know, I've spent my time learning things.
Right.
And I feel like I've learned a lot, but it took a lot of concentration, a lot of practice and so on to learn. And so I don't see myself as a creative person at all. But you all were pointing out to me some of the how therapy and counseling and psychotherapy is very creative, and indeed it really is indeed.
Yes. Yeah, and coming from a creative background, I see it as completely creative because, you know, whether I'm creating art, visual art, or whether I am creating an environment in which a client, a patient feels comfortable disclosing something to me, I'm creating an atmosphere, I'm creating a feeling, I'm creating emotions. It's just a different medium.
Well, you're creating a space,
yes.
A safe space, mm-hmm. in which a person can express his or her emotions.
Yeah.
You know, without judgment and criticism.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Mm.
And I feel like one reason my firm has been terribly successful is that we've managed to create a space in our office that people feel free to think. It's a flexible environment and yet full of structure and processes that have to be followed in order to get the work done. But we've taken away all the clutter. So if you're hired as a graphic designer, you don't have to deal with the chatter of clients. You know, you're only listening to one person talk to you about what the client expects, deserves, etc.
You make a good point because I remember Albert Einstein. I don't remember Albert Einstein.
No.
I have read about Albert Einstein, and he was saying that unless you have freedom, you cannot have creativity.
Yes. Mm.
That freedom is a predisposition to being able to be creative.
Strongly believe that, because if your mind can get so cluttered with the details that have nothing to do with the job at hand. We had a very interesting creative director come and talk to our firm. He was from the Richards Group, which is the largest privately held marketing company in the world today, right there in Dallas, Texas. And he came over and he started talking about human beings are only capable of about 5 big choices a day. Beyond the 5 big choices, you start making errors. And so one thing that he did in his life to to lower the stress, and I've heard our president talk about this, is you make your selection of clothes as simple as possible so that doesn't become a big decision every morning. You know, you start reducing the big decisions that you have to make every day so you can unclutter your mind in order to think and be creative.
Yeah, I remember he did say that. Mm-hmm. Listeners out there, Red River Radio listeners, call in with and join our conversation on creativity and put our two guests to the test here. Mm-hmm. Ask them some difficult questions or make suggestions to them and see what they would say about it.
And the listeners can also ask a question via Twitter at RRR Public Radio.
You know, if I were to define time, I would say time is the measure of motion according to the prior and the posterior. It's a measurement of motion.
Sure.
How would you define creativity? What the heck is it?
Well, I think that's a great question. That's actually something I was going to bring up because I think we potentially run the risk of saying everyone, you know, every act could you know be perceived as being creative. You know, I create this and you create that, and we all can do this, and we almost kind of skirt in some ways. We're avoiding trying to define this thing. This thing called creativity. I don't claim to know what the definition of it is. I think we have established that it's not completely exclusive in terms of some people have it, some people don't. I think it is more a question of accessing. I think, again, I'll go back to what I said earlier. It's about the freedom, which you said, Anne, and it's about within that freedom, what do you do with that freedom? Are you able to tap into your imagination? I mean, a question that comes out of this is, what is the imagination? Because I think that's really where creativity comes from. You know, you can create something, but how are you creating it? Are you creating it by watching a YouTube video that shows you step-by-step process of how to do it? Right? Mm-hmm. That's not being creative, I don't think, necessarily. Mm-hmm. There's some problem-solving involved, you know? But you're imitating in a way at that point. I think there's something about creativity that involves a genesis, an idea, the first time that something has happened, even if it's only for yourself. It mm-hmm. may be someone mm-hmm. else out there, but the first time that you're aware of something happening.
You know, we had Dr. Pat Sewell, a psychiatrist who's an artist, on the program 6 or 8 months ago. I can't remember exactly when it was, but he was saying that when he is being creative, what he does is he does something that comes from within, and if it's pleasing to him, he continues it. So his criteria is, and he has no formal training, it's just that if he's doing something and it's pleasing, that was his definition.
I've heard so many writers talk about, you know, how do they approach their work and how do they write the novels. And I heard one recently, and I think it was on NPR, talk about the fact that he made himself sit down and write, I think it was 1,000 words every day. Whether he had anything to say, whether it was within the context of the novel that he was working on, he forced himself to put down on paper 1,000 words a day. And suddenly in that process, it felt like that was the springboard in his life to get him on track. And I think that gets back to the freedom.
Right.
And yet, the focus, the love of something. For me, I have a great love of the art of communication. And what I realized when I walked away from theater was that communication is everywhere, and it's so vital. It's within the context of advertising, certainly, mm-hmm. but it's also in the context of you know, public relations and being able to adequately and effectively express an idea. And
it's vital in having a successful marriage.
Yes.
Being able to
being a counselor.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Connecting that idea of accessing this thing and then also the idea of freedom. You know, I'll use my dad as an example. I don't think he'll mind. Probably should have asked him. But you know, here's an example of someone who was a CPA. Right, for 30 years mm-hmm. Before a transition in his life where he decided to sell his business and become a writer.
Wow, that's a big
that's
jump.
A big transition.
And what I mean is, like, sometimes this thing is there inside of you. It's living inside of you. It has no form of expression. You're not in a space where you can harness it and tap into it and release it. But then you do, and it's this thing that's maybe perhaps been dormant, you know, for a number of years or whatever it may be, and then all of a sudden you're able to access it.
Wow.
Yeah, we had a very outstanding lawyer here in Shreveport who gave up the practice of law, of which he was an A1 lawyer, and became a writer.
Mm.
And I know another lawyer who practices now who's just an outstanding writer. You know, it's
wow.
Just, you know, so many, many people like that. Call in with us and join our conversation, 1-800-552-8502. Now, you guys need to interrupt me because I can get carried away on this. I've got a lot of things to say and a lot of questions to ask. So
we're just getting warmed up.
Yeah.
Okay. Shelley, do we have a caller?
We do. We have Kathy from Shreveport. Go right ahead with your question, Kathy.
Yes, I just wanted to ask Logan Sledge whether he thinks that creativity can be taught. I know he's a teacher, and so am I. And I'm just curious whether, you know, what part you think that you can actually, besides just nurturing and saying, oh, you know, this is really good, what else can you do to actually teach creativity?
Now this is turning into a family affair. Thank you, Mom. I just talked about my dad, and now my mom's calling in.
Well, she needs her airtime too.
No, that's great, and a great question, and it's one that we were kind of kicking around the other day talking about this topic. Let me kind of sort of frame this with my background, because it'll start to make sense to me, at least, hopefully to everyone. As we, you know, I teach theater arts at Centenary College, and I work with young actors and would be actors and theater performers every day. It's something I get a lot of enjoyment out of. Now, okay, is creativity. Well, let's use a different word for a second, and let's use the word talent. All right, and then maybe we'll come back around to the idea of creativity. Can you teach talent? You know, for an actor. Oh, you have a look on your face. I can't wait to hear what you say. I don't either. I think you can teach technique.
Yes.
And technique is a huge component. Take a visual artist. You can teach them technique. Musician, technique, the same. But you can't necessarily... I really don't think teach that thing that is in there. And again, it's not. I don't think it's for lack of trying. I just think it's for a futile effort in so many ways. You know, because that is something that may be within each of us. But now we're talking again. We're back to that idea of accessing it, and you can't necessarily show someone how to access something like that.
Well, I think it goes, you know, I'm just thinking about my visual arts that I've done, and it was a drive that I had to have internally in order to keep on doing what I was doing, because there's so many times that people might look at something that I did and say, ooh, that's, I don't like that. But yet I would dust myself off, pick myself up, and keep on doing it, you know, no matter how many times I got knocked down, or no matter how many times I didn't get chosen to be in an art show, or there was this drive that I just kept on doing it regardless.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Right. Well, and I think as it relates to that, I mean, it's a subjective thing, right?
Yeah.
As we're talking about evaluating art, but I do think even within that subjectivity, there are some metrics that can be at play there as we look at art and try to evaluate art. Same thing with talent, creativity. You know, is somewhat different, because again, it's the notion that if someone's not accessing it, right, and we're working under the assumption that some element, a degree of creativity is in that person, then we ask the question, why are they not able to access that? Why are they not able to find that source? And this kind of takes us into that issue of well, is it their conditions that they grew up around?
Well, you can know? You as a professor Can you look out and see your students and see which ones have what you call talent versus which ones don't? I mean, can you tell that?
Based on, again, the work that we do in the classroom, right, I am able to see who is expressing, again, a talent and who is not expressing or presenting a talent. I have to be cautious here, right, because I certainly don't want to say that when I do that, I'm saying this person's talented, this person's not. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is right now, in this moment, in this space, I am not seeing this person's talent. It might be in there. They're not able to get at it, right?
And again, I think that goes back to making sure that the environment is conducive to that individual's ability to express themselves. Because at the end of the day, that's what, when I hear the word talent, it is when a fellow in human connects with you through their own personal expression.
I'll credit Patsy Rodenberg, who's a great theater voice and movement teacher, and my teacher at Cal State, Joan Melton, was a student of hers. And Joan once told us this story from Patsy, where Patsy was in a workshop and had mentioned that she had recently learned that the Taliban had banned balloons and kites, and that was curious to her, and she was thinking about that, and what she wrapped her head around was this idea that they banned those things because when we look up, we get inspiration, we're inspired when we look up, and when we look down, we're closed in, we're more, right, there's no inspiration there, there's no expression there, there's no idea in that. And so I think talking about conditioning,
yes,
right? People can become conditioned based on that environment, based on the circumstances, to essentially be creative or not.
That's interesting because Dr. Sewell was talking to me about a patient that we were working with, and this particular man, you know, Dr. Sewell stood up was standing up, and he bends over and puts his head down toward the floor as if you're looking at a ball, and his hands are toward the ball, his head is toward the ball, and he's hunched over like the Hunchback of Notre Dame, you know, looking over like that. And that's the patient. The patient can only see that very, very small reality. And he's not looking to the sides, and he is certainly not looking up at balloons and kites in the sky.
Right.
And so his whole redundancy of his life and the repetition of his problems and being stuck, you know, he moved into a rut and then he decorated the rut.
Yes.
You know, and he can't go anywhere else.
Staring at the rut.
Right.
And so we're trying to help the patient stand up straight, look to the left, look to the right, look up, you know, maybe even dance a little bit, run a little bit and so on, and move out of the rut in which he is stuck. If that makes any sense. So I like
that. Well, and in particular with students coming in, we don't know what their environment had been. You know, when they tried to express themselves, was that corrected?
Right.
Was that not accepted, acceptable? And so one of the reasons I knew you would be great on this program is because I would have to believe that every day you're issued a challenge of trying to get to know that individual student.
Right.
And bringing forward.
Right. Well, I mean, because above all else, I think acting is an imaginative.
Oh,
imaginative.
Yes.
Your imagination is your strongest tool as an actor. And I tell my actors that all the time. But then, okay, great. If I can't get to it, I can't get to it. You know, then that becomes the thing we have to work on.
Again, I invite you, our listeners, to call in 1-800-552-8502 here at Red River Radio. I was going to ask both of you, you know, I made a note here about, you know, a lot of times we think that creative people are sort of these Albert Einstein looking folks, you know, with the hair flying all kind of like your hair. you know, they're disheveled and they're the absent-minded professor. And, you know, what do you think about that is there a stereotype for the creative type? And is he generally fidgety and flighty and disorganized?
I think there very much is a stereotype. And I have to argue against it. And I mean, getting back to the quote that you all just did of Albert Einstein, until you are free to think, you can't be creative.
Right.
Well, when I have to agree with that, but the most creative people I've known in my life have been terribly focused, have placed a major structure in their life to give them that freedom in order to create. And I don't know that you can be flighty, and I don't see the two of them going hand in hand.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I definitely agree that I think there is a stereotype that exists. You know, as we think about that creative person, an image comes to mind. You know, and moving away from just the image, right? The meme, right, of this creative person. I think the characteristics are still really something to talk about, because forget about the look of the person,
yes,
right? But
yes.
But the characteristics, the idea that they are unorganized, the way that they're potentially, you know, unfocused, I think is a stereotype, and I disagree with it.
But wouldn't it be really? I mean, you're talking about people that have talent. Even though you have talent, don't they still have to practice and form and re-practice? And I mean, everybody that I know that's really excellent at something has worked very hard to become excellent at it. You know, that it just isn't something, excellent doesn't just happen.
Right.
It's sort of practiced. Yeah, it seems to me to be that way.
Practiced, and you know, I recall a choir teacher of mine. I was growing up and doing, you know, boys choir, you know, choir and things like that. And the choir director at one point said, he said to us, I'll never forget this. He said, practice doesn't make perfect. Everyone always says practice makes perfect. He said, perfect practice makes perfect. And I tell that to all of my students that I'm directing and we're in rehearsal, because there's a way to go about practicing. You know, there's a way to go about rehearsing a play, and it's,
Shelley, you're telling us that you have a caller.
Yes, we do. We have Hazel from Shreveport. Go right ahead with your question, Hazel.
Okay, thank you for taking my call. My question is this, and you kind of hit on it a little bit about that stuck in that rut thing. How do you work with those that you can see the potential is there, but for whatever reason, be it the way they were reared, their culture, or they were told that we don't discuss, and so they push these things down, but it's in them for that creativity. When you sort of see this, how do you continue to work with someone and bring it out of them? And I'll hang up so I can really hear the answer.
All right.
Okay.
Well, one of my first suggestions is that we get clues all the time from our fellow human beings. Clues about where they're comfortable talking, what subjects they're comfortable talking about. And I have found through the years that one way of helping people discover openness and their own ability to be creative is to be able to get them to simply talk to you about something, a subject matter that they are comfortable with, and not making them uncomfortable, but often that you can take that thread and continue on, sort of like a good play.
Absolutely. Now, I think it's case by case to really kind of get to this question, depending on the person and those clues that they're giving you. Like, different people have different needs.
That's right.
that are going to get them into that place. I have a student right now working on this play that we're opening next week. And there's a very tricky section of this play at the top of the play where she has to come out and basically do this lip sync battle, you know, and play this song and just go nuts and sling clothes around. And, you know, it's I could tell it was terrifying her. She was absolutely frozen in fear of this opening moment of the play. However, I knew that in this specific instance, knowing this particular actor, the thing to do was not to be gentle. Yeah. In that moment, the thing to do was to actually, kind of like Busick used to do with us all the time,
beat us up a little.
Right, you know, was to actually push and push, because I could tell if I backed down, this was just gauging the moment. If I backed down, it was going to be a concession. We were never really going to be dealing with what we needed to deal with. So we pushed through.
Great point.
You know, yes. And we pushed through and now it's one of her most favorite moments in the show. She loves to go out there and rock and roll on stage.
Love it. I was in a play called Pride's Crossing, and I made the first entrance, which I always hated doing in theater. And I was playing a 92-year-old woman on a walker, and it seemed like an interminable length of time. I walked on this walker, hopefully conveying all the pain and the hope and the joy that this woman had in her. And it seems like it was about 12 steps. But the first time I did it, I thought, oh, my God. And I hated it. And of course, Busick just beat me up severely about the head and said, you know, what are you doing up there? And of course, it brought it out. And that became my favorite time during that play. So, sometimes
it's often in the play, it's the thing that you're most afraid of, whether it's that line that you haven't figured out, whether it's that moment or whatever. That's often that hurdle that that wall you've got to break through, and then sometimes it's the key, you know, it's the way in to kind of that final puzzle piece, figuring out the character and what the playwright's trying to do with you.
Well, Logan, we have a follow-up kind of to something that you had mentioned earlier. Adults transitioning from career to writing, what kind of advice do y'all have for middle-aged and older adults who want to pursue a creative dream, maybe writing or painting, but maybe not just as a hobby, maybe doing this professionally? So how would you encourage someone who is wanting to transition into a more creative role professionally, who's maybe middle-aged or older?
I can just weigh in on a little bit of that and say that I think it's very difficult for men in our society today to change careers in midstream. I don't think society supports much of that, you know, and I think it used to be the case that men had, you know, years ago, and I knew more about this, but they changed careers 9 times. I don't think that happens anymore. You know, I think there's just not a lot of opportunities.
At the same time, though, we are sort of in a time, right, where you have to be able to reinvent yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, we have jobs closing, people dry, you know, something is, and all of a sudden you find yourself kind of at a certain period in your life where you thought it was maybe going to be this stable thing, and I'm going to be working for 5-10 more years and retiring. But now all of a sudden I am not even through choice, but I'm having to reinvent myself and get this other job over here.
A good example of that's the Cybersecurity Center and Bossier Parish Community College over there. And they're saying that they're having all of these jobs. There's like 40, 50, 60,000 jobs in this area that are going to be opening in the next few years in cybersecurity.
Yes.
And we don't have any people trained for do that.
Right. 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 Well, I certainly noticed it a lot in the teaching field. Before I got to Centenary, I was teaching at Byrd High School for 4 years. And you would have a lot of, you know, call them transplants or whatever. I mean, they used to do something else, right? And now they're pursuing a teaching through it's an alt cert. You know, I did my alt cert here at LSUS, you know, because I wanted to teach college, but there wasn't a job. This isn't the market for it until the Centenary position opened up. So I think you see that a lot in a lot of different fields.
Practically, I would think on a local level, one thing I would advise is to be able to look out and see if there is a fellow artist that you admire their work, and try to ask them to mentor you and get to know what life is. I mean, I think a lot of us imagine sometimes a career, an alternative career. I know that one time about, 15, 20 years ago, I looked back on my college days and thought, you know, what would have been like if you had been a political science teacher? Mm. I think that would have been just so awesome. And I had lunch with a political science professor, and I said, I basically want you to tell me, did I make a mistake? And it was one of the most delightful lunches because we just compared notes about day to day, what he did, what did I do. It was a major wake-up call, and I went to work the next day with a big grin on my face. So, in other words, I would think that you look out on your horizon, your immediate horizon, and see if there's someone in that field that you could talk to, that you could, you know, just ask them, what is it like?
It's so interesting, because usually we see this the reverse. We see someone coming, trying to be in a creative field, and not making it for whatever reason. And so then they have to transition into something else. And we're talking about being in this other type of a field, but then transitioning into a more of a creative job situation. And I think it is challenging, you know, again, relating it back to my own experience with working with young actors who are, I hope, right, planning on going and pursuing this as a career. I tell them you have to be prepared. You have to understand that you need to love what it's going to be like trying to be an actor. You can't just say, I want to be an actor, right? And that's what I'm going to love is when I'm an actor. You actually have to love just the act of trying to be an actor. If you don't, and that makes you unhappy.
And see, I think that's process versus outcome.
Yes.
Right.
You know, we call it playing football. We don't call it winning football.
Right.
Correct.
We call it fishing. We don't call it catching.
Right.
We call it hunting. We don't call it killing.
Right.
So it's, you know, the goal is not necessarily, I know the goal is to win, but really the goal is to play.
Right.
And like Shelley was saying earlier, it was that drive, even when you weren't getting compliments on your visual art, mm-hmm. you had that drive to keep going.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
you knew what you wanted to create.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a caller. We have Betty from Shreveport. Betty, go right ahead with your question.
Well, I actually have just an observation. I'm enjoying your all's discussion so much, and I believe that the essence of creativity is awareness, being aware of what is going on and reaching the pure potentiality that we have. It's knowledge of self and then awareness of what possibilities they are out there and then going for them. Because I believe each individual has an essence that is creative, and it's just tapping into that essence. And by being conscious and aware of what's going on, you never know what could evolve. Anyway, I'm enjoying your conversation very much.
Thank you
so much.
Now, I recognize that voice, and that woman is a fabulous artist herself. So she's coming from a place where she is that creative person.
Mm.
Yeah, and if you went into her house, you would immediately see that. Yeah. Well, I think, but her point about being in the here and now, living in the present, being spontaneous, being aware, not rehearsing in advance and rehashing afterwards,
right.
But being,
right.
and I think spontaneity, being aware and being spontaneous. What do you think?
Absolutely. Well, and the ability to listen.
Mm.
I think we talked about that on Monday. I mean, that ability to absolutely be there with the person you're talking to and actually hear them. I've been in so many frustrating discussions where it was obvious that nobody was listening to one another.
Right.
Because they had the answer before the question was finished, or they were on to the next topic.
Yeah, you know, again, to relate that back to acting terms, you know, it's the idea of anticipating. You know, when you're on stage with someone,
yes,
and that you can tell that you can, first off, you can just see it. They're and you feel it. They're not listening. And then they start jumping lines because they're anticipating, or they start playing that next moment before it's even there. And what you're trying to do in the theater is always create the illusion of the first time.
Yes.
Which is challenging.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You rehearse this thing for four weeks, sometimes longer, sometimes shorter, but hopefully at least 4 weeks. And then you put in all that work and all those hours, but then you go out there and you have to create the illusion of that this is the first time this is happening.
Yes. And you're aware of it for
right.
the first time.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
It's very challenging.
That's an effort. We thank Kathy and Hazel and Betty for calling in 1-800-552-8502. And I'd invite Kathy, Hazel, and Betty And I know one is your mom. You're not limited to one call. If you want to rejoin the conversation, you can call again.
Right. She might not have liked the answer. So, you know.
I thought it was a fairly good answer.
I did too.
Yeah.
Going back to Betty, I love what she said about self-knowledge. I found that so interesting.
Yes.
You know, knowing the self. And that's how you're, yes, spontaneity, but you're operating out of that place of self-knowledge.
Well, see, in mental health, I often talk about the rules of mental health. One is to live in the present. Mm. The second is to be non-reactive. The third is to find your own compass and follow that. And it seems to me like the healthiest people I know are being themselves.
Right.
They are not being who someone else wants them to be.
Right.
They're not playing a role like a pleaser or, you know, something, some role, or they're not seeking perfection, hiding behind that. They're actually spontaneously connected within themselves and being themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
Those are the folks that I think are the most healthy.
Yeah.
And there are other rules of mental health, like making contributions to other people, connecting with other people, being part of a community. Mm. You know, all of those things.
So much of it is it's practical wisdom. You know, it's practical wisdom. This idea of being in respond, don't react, right?
Mm-hmm.
Reacting can be so unhealthy. And when you are in a state of reaction instead of response means that you have power. You are taking your power.
Mm-hmm.
When you react, you're giving your power. And
yeah, that's what I mean by non-reactivity,
right?
Yes.
Which I think is the second rule.
Absolutely.
To not give yourself up, to live in the present and to be responsive but not reactive.
I think we see, I certainly know that I can speak for everyone, but I see a lot of people and younger actors especially, you know, they someone has taken their power from them.
Yes.
Well, at some point, someone has taken that from them. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of what I do. I work to illustrate that and make them aware of that.
See what you guys think of this idea. You know, I often tell patients, you know, you see these little little children have these pictures that are dotted lines of a duck. Mm. Yeah, are you with me?
Yes.
And so the child takes the pen or the crayon and just draws all over the place. It isn't at all within the lines whatsoever.
Hmm.
And then some stupid adult comes along and says, well, Johnny, that's not right. You're supposed to stay in the lines. And, of course, Johnny thinks it's a great production.
Right.
Right.
And there seems to me to be a split at that point in this little boy's awareness of himself. What he thought was outstanding has now been judged.
Mm-hmm.
That's not right. You need to draw within the lines. And off we go to learning, which I'm all in favor of learning.
Sure.
But we are also, in some ways, putting our thumb on that little boy's imagination. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts about that?
Oh, I agree totally. I mean, there's so many clues that are given to us as we're growing up, not to do this, mm-hmm. to do that. You're rewarded for that. You're punished for this. And, you know, before too long, yourself has been. Mm-hmm. If you allow yourself to become a pleaser or, you know, that persona that you think everybody's expecting to show up that day, then, and that's sad.
Yeah, the whole, you know, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. Well, that's an awful thing to say to
yes.
a child. Sometimes they have things to say that aren't nice.
That is true.
Yeah, that's true.
And they're very observant.
Right.
We have John from Shreveport. Go right ahead with your question, John.
Well, I'm really enjoying this evening's program, getting a lot out of it. I can't think of a single thing that I've heard that I would disagree with. I wonder if you guys could kind of speak to one component of creativity that I find is important as well, is getting in that... It gets back to that freedom and the confidence, giving yourself that space and permission to express your creativity, putting your frame of mind in, and having the patience that I will be able to do this. I don't have it at this moment. If I'm 2 weeks out from the opening of a play, I don't have it, but I will get it. You know, if I'm staring at this blank sheet of paper, be patient. It will come. It will happen, but you've got to unclutter your mind and give yourself permission and that confidence to allow that creative essence to come out. Does that make any sense?
Oh, yes. It
absolutely
makes
does.
Makes
yeah.
tremendous sense.
Yeah, I love it because being creative is very frustrating. It can be very, very frustrating. Yeah.
And you can easily sabotage your own efforts by start hearing the voice in your head saying, you know, you really probably can't do this role mm-hmm. after all, mm-hmm. or you really are not up to this task. And that if you allow what I've been told is the saboteur that we carry around in each one of us, we allow that voice to become deafening, then we can't hear our own creativity and we can't go about doing the task at hand. And oh, by the way, we are truly keeping it in the family. This is my husband, John Gale. Thank you, John.
I tack on to that. And you know, I keep thinking of this moment where I was in a play called Grasmere, and I was playing William Wordsworth. And I was in a scene with another actor, Aaron Lamb, who's now in Seattle, I believe. And he was playing Samuel Taylor Coleridge. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Samuel was frustrated with William because William's just sitting there writing, steady writing, working. And Samuel's tearing his hair out, trying to come up with this idea for, you know, the albatross. And what am I going to do, you know? And it was such a fun scene. But it was William, you know, my character, William Wordsworth, kept trying to say, you know, you're over romanticizing this process. You keep thinking it's going to be spiritus, right? This inspiration that strikes you in a moment, and then there you go. And that might happen, but a true artist can't rely always on that happening. That's where technique comes in to back you up, and you work through. And if it's a block, you work through. You know, another thing that makes me think of is one of our sort of quote-unquote rules of improvisation. It seems silly to have rules with improvisation, but you know, it's the idea of letting yourself fail.
Is that sort of like planning to be spontaneous? Rules of improv. Well, I'm gonna take 15 minutes and plan how I can be spontaneous the next hour.
Right, right. Well, yeah, improvisation, you know, as an acting class, I think is valuable, certainly. But one of our, you know, as we go through the approach of, you know, of it, I just give them some guidelines, and one of those guidelines, maybe that's a better word, is let yourself fail. There's a difference between failing and letting yourself fail. You know, anybody can, I go and I fail, right? But giving yourself goes back to permission, what John was talking about, right? Let yourself fail.
That's so interesting because we have some of these kids in our practice that young men and women, high school students, you know, they're perfectionistic. They've got to get 100%. 99 is not nearly good enough.
Yeah.
And I keep trying to teach them to intentionally put the wrong answer on the test. And get a 96 mm-hmm. or a 95 mm-hmm. or a 93. Mm-hmm. But it's very hard to treat or to help people fail. Yeah. And it'd be okay.
It's such a taboo, bad thing to fail. I look at some of the young actors in the theater program, and you know, the first time I was coming in, I didn't know what to expect, and I'm giving them notes after a rehearsal or whatever, you know, the way that I'm used to getting notes, and they were looking at me horrified. I had just torn their world apart by giving them those notes. Mm-hmm. You could tell they'd never been criticized in that way.
Right.
And they didn't know how to handle it.
Yeah, and the word criticism, it really means critique.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And a critique is another way of looking at it.
Right.
It's an effort to make something better.
Right.
You know, it's not a bad word.
No.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Welcome, as a matter of fact, especially if you're trying to be an actor or a writer or a painter.
Trying to learn.
Learn.
You know, I like your husband, John, and his idea of patience. You know, Shelley and I write reports in our firm. And
I have to be very patient.
with the person that offers you critiques?
Yes.
Yeah.
Some subtext there.
You know, we write these reports about human beings. Mm-hmm. These are real people. Mm. And so what we write about them, not only do we have to be accurate, but we really have to capture the humanity and who they are as people. And that takes a lot of patience.
Yeah, it's important, and we labor over it.
We labor
yes,
over
I
that.
Think. Mm.
Yeah, because the judge is going to make a decision, right. Or the jury is going to make a decision about this person or these children. And so our writing is, we feel like it's like we just feel like we're not really good writers because it takes so much effort to do it well. And so I like the idea that John's talking about the patience and the paper in front of you and the conceptualization and the time and the thought and the alternative hypotheses and so on.
That gets more into the act of creating. You know, as you think about the theater, that open space, that blank palette, that blank canvas, you know, it's that act of creating. I'd love to get back. We sort of went down a different path, which was fun. But getting back to what you were saying earlier about the stereotype, the creative person being this way, you know, because I think that kind of goes into some of what we were talking about on Monday in terms of, you know, children being so free. That's an assumption, right? Children are more creative than adults. Why is that? Why does that happen? What happens to us along the way, you know, that stops us being creative? And I just thought that was so much fun talking about the other day.
Well, and one thing, you know, you notice in children, like when you were talking about the duck painting within the box, the little dotted lines. What I notice when I'm around children is they are so intensely involved in what they're doing. They don't see anything else around them. I mean, they're so focused. Again,
right? You know, you see how that goes against the stereotype.
Yes, and it they shut out all of the chaos around them, and they're focused on whatever that one thing is. You know, that we have lots of people at our office who have young children, and oftentimes Gremillion and Pew becomes a little daycare center at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And I'm always amazed. I am totally entranced by the fact that that child is in a totally new environment, away from school, away from home. We have 186 people walking around that they've never seen before. And they get involved in something, and they don't see any of us.
It reminds me of, I was interviewing some golfers. And when the guys hit the ball well, they can't tell you what they did. But when they hit a poor shot, they can tell you what they did wrong.
Right.
Yes.
And it's almost like the child totally absorbed in it.
There's, aware.
There's no duplicity. They're not conflicted. They're not thinking.
Right, right.
They're just doing it.
Right, but there's an element of concentration there that, again, I think contradicts that stereotype that people are unfocused or, you know.
Yeah.
Shelley, you have another caller.
Yes, we do. We have Greg from Longview. Go ahead, Greg.
Yes, thank you for taking the call. I'm 30 years old now, and whenever I was in my early 20s, I remember being extremely creative. However, having also that paired with the destructive behavior that I've been medicated for now for bipolar disorder, is there a way to latch a hold of that creativity without the destructive behavior?
Well, you know, unfortunately, that's a complaint sometimes with some of my clients about medications, that it can kind of dampen some of that creativity. And usually what I help them to do is to find other ways to be creative or other ways to spark their creativity rather than perhaps some destructive kind of behavior. I don't know, did anybody else have any kind of advice for Greg as far as how to kind of reconnect with his creativity?
I would jump in and say I do think a lot of times it's associative, right? People that smoke it, you know, cigarettes, right? It's so associative. It's if you're getting in the car to drive to work, that's when you normally smoke. So guess what? You're trying to quit. You get in that car, boom! It's associative. That's when you want it. So I think sometimes it's I don't know that. I'm not a doctor to speak on this, but I don't know that the creativity that's inside there is reliant on this destructive behavior, whatever it may be, whether it's a substance or something along those lines. But I would say that it's more in our mind that we associate that we need that thing to make us be this way. If that make you know.
My oldest brother suffered severely from bipolar. Manic depression, and he was probably one of the most creative people I've ever known. And it was very sad and frustrating to us because what I always imagined was, it was like he was filled with so much creativity, his brain couldn't contain itself. And he would have to shut it down, or at least he felt like he had to shut it down so that he would turn to alcohol. What I always thought, and unfortunately, at the time that he was battling this so severely, there were several doctors in Dallas, Texas, that were making a career over associating creativity with bipolar and making it like a badge of honor to be in this club, that you were the most creative people. He had a whole list of all of the geniuses in the art world that were manic depressive and suffered from bipolar. What I always wanted to express to my brother was that if he could ever, again, I'm beginning to sound like a broken record, but to focus on one aspect that he wanted to achieve. There were so many different aspects that he wanted to be perfect in. 100% had to be. 99 wasn't even close to being acceptable. So again, it was like calming your inside down with an awareness of, is that truly making me happy? Getting back to what Dr. Sewell said, trying to focus on one aspect that truly found rewarding and staying focused on that. And I do think that gets back to one of John's questions. When you're stuck, you know, writer's block or whatever it is that you're facing, I think the advice that writer had of sitting down and just beginning to write words on paper, or picking up a play that you may not even be working on and starting to read it as if you were in it, I think there are all kinds of ways to basically fool the brain into thinking, this is good. I'm liking this.
Well, you could look at so many musicians that just comes to mind, you know, that maybe early in their career were engaging in some form of destructive behavior, but they reach a place where they let that go, but they're still able to create.
Yes.
Without that, they've moved on.
I need to tell you to stop that. Stop that creativity right now, because we're running out of time.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Sorry.
Not being creative.
Logan and Ann, I really want to thank you very, very much for being here tonight with us on this program. And I want to thank, Kathy and Hazel and Betty and John. And I think what I'm going to do, Greg, with your question, I'm going to talk with Dr. Sewell about your question. And maybe if you listen, can tune in with us next month, I'm going to spend a little more time answering that question and maybe offer a somewhat of an answer next time we do this in our February program. Do you think that's okay, Shelley?
Yeah, because we kind of ran out of time for Greg. So
I think, but that's a question I haven't, with the medication, I haven't thought a lot about that. Mm-hmm, so thank you guys for being here. It's been delightful being with you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much. That was fun.
Mental Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. For all mental health questions, you should consult a mental health professional or physician. This show is available for download, or you may listen to a podcast of this program on our website, redriverradio.org. Mental Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The producer is Renee Moran, with production assistance provided this evening by Wally Derleth, Tim Snell, and Henry Edwards. Production of Mental Health Matters is made possible in part by the Knoll Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana, and also by the Gambles at Spring Lake, Gambles Guest Care's assisted living community, located behind Spring Lake Guest Care Center on Line Avenue in Shreveport. Learn more about GambleGuestCare.com. I'm Shelley Visconti, along with Dr. Mark Vegan. Thank you for listening, and good night.